From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of October 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, and then a bit later in the program, the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Windsor Grain and TGM. In agricultural news, the House and Senate have both approved FTAs with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama, and the praise has been pouring in from all around the U.S. agricultural sector. And the four leaders of the House and Senate Agriculture Committee have been working on a new farm bill plan to be presented to the Super Committee. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear our latest In My Backyard segment and talk with meteorologist Peter Levin right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat down 9 3/4 today. That's the March, actually, at 653.5. December at 618, down 8 3/4. July soft red at 695.25 for next year, down 11 cents. The hard red in Kansas City finished 10.5 lower at $7.36 for the July contract. December corn futures, 638.5, 2.5 cents lower. March at 649.75, down 3. The May at 656.5, down 3.5. And July futures down 3 at 661.25. Next year's December, $5.94 3/4, a penny and a half lower. Here comes the mixed part. Beans were higher. November contract, $12.57, up 17.5 for the day. January, $12.66 3/4, up 17.25. The March at $12.74, 17 cents higher. May, $12.76 3/4, up 14.25. And July at $12.83 3/4, 13.5 cents higher. November beans, $12.39 1/4, up 4 3/4. Bean meal at $3.52.20, or rather at $3.25.20, up 5.10. And bean oil at $52.50. That finished 60 higher on the afternoon. Mercantile Exchange, October live cattle at 121 and a nickel, 57.5 higher. December at 122.85, up $1.62.5. October feeders at 138.70, up 47.5 cents. November futures at 143.45 for the feeder cattle, 12.5 higher, and the lean hogs for the day, $93 even, 87.5 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, November contract, $84.37 a barrel, down $1.20. Ethanol at 264, that's a penny and 3/10 higher. Natural gas at 353.6, up 4 7/10. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 3 7/10 cents higher, $2.97 2/10. And the gold futures for the day, down $14 even at $1,667.30 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 11,496, down 23 points. The dollar at 76.9 is just about unchanged on the day. The CRB index at 310.97, down 0.17. The weather forecast says that this afternoon we'll see showers. It'll be cloudy, a high of 68 degrees in Urbana-Champaign with a west-northwest wind at 4 to 17 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 25. Chance of precipitation for this afternoon set at 70%. Tonight, cloudy during the early evening hours and then gradually clearing out, a low of 45. West-northwest winds at about 11 to 14. And Friday, sunny skies, a high of 66, breezy, a west-northwest wind at 11 to 14, increasing to 19 to 22. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles an hour tomorrow. Friday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 40. West-northwest winds at 10 to 14. And on Saturday, sunny, a high of 66. West winds between 9 and 13. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 49. Sunday, partly sunny and a high of 69 degrees. Sunday night, cloudy at a low of 48. Monday, that chance of showers and thunderstorms returns. Mostly cloudy, a high of 64. Monday night, it sticks with us with a low of 47. Tuesday, a chance of showers continues. Partly sunny, a high of just 58 degrees on Tuesday of next week. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 40. A more complete look at the weather forecast a bit later in the program.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. On the phone line with us, as usually, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been a fun week. There was a 40-cent move in the market, but it didn't come on the day of the USDA report, and I bet you've been watching the charts with a great deal of interest. What are the things and signs that you see there that are the most deliberate and valuable to you?
Well, I think, you know, last week on corn, we did finish out the week with a weekly reversal up. Now, it was kind of kind of limped across the line there on Friday because we were down, but we did finish the week with a reversal to the upside, and it came at a time when you normally make a harvest low. You have two time frames that you kind of make harvest lows on average, and you know averages, you can get lost in averages, is that first week of October, then again you kind of come back and maybe test those lows around the first week of December. So it came seasonally correct. And then, of course, this week we were able to follow through. We punched out last week's high, and we're sharply above last Friday's close. So we've got another higher week going. And when you take a look at the chart, we're roughly about 70 cents or so off our lows that were made in early October. So we've got a monthly reversal to the upside going for us in corn. I think some of the things that I'm looking at is a bullish divergence pattern in the stochastic indicator, which favors a push up through 666, which is the kind of the rally high point that we had prior to that September 30th stocks report, where we basically collapsed then on down into that early October low. So for the most part, with today's closes or this week's advance, we are back to pre-September 30th report levels, which I think is should have been the case, because I've always been in the opinion that stocks reports explain more what you did in the past 30 days than what they're going to do, what the market's going to do during the next 30 days, because the market already has worked those numbers. It's just that the trade a lot of times has to react to them, and that's basically what happens. So I think technically corn is in has some pretty solid footing here, but we do need to go on up through this the 666 level. That kind of puts us into that 50% range on both a lead futures contract. A 50% retracement on a lead futures contract gets you back to about 669, and a 50% retracement on the December futures is about 675. Now, technicians will sell those levels. Those levels, if they're attained, are going to be resistance, because technicians will close their eyes, sell that 50%. Now, they will put stops on top of the market. If it doesn't work, they'll buy their way out. But I think initially they will sell those levels, wait on a setback, and then take their profits.
Okay, so why don't you go back to just before the report, that 40-cent move. Can you give me an explanation of why that happened earlier in the week?
China buying.
I mean, we've heard a couple of times. I was just double checking.
Well, there's a couple things. Well, technically, the buy signals flashed on corn on Friday. So if you were following, if you were a technician, you bought corn on Friday.
Because of the hook reversal up.
And then the buy signals actually flashed on both wheat and soybeans on Monday. So if you were a technician, you were long the market. So the market was getting help technically from the chart buyers. And then the news came that China was in the corn market and bean market. And that just basically, then the whole market just basically blew up, and the technicians were on board if they were following the signals that the chart was signaling to them.
Okay, then I want you to go back just a bit because you mentioned that the grain stocks report looks back. And we did the same thing last year at the same time. The grain stocks report reversed an uptrend sharply down, and then we turned around and had actually a big move upwards in the WASDE and crop production reports when they were released for October, which, for the most part, with the exception of a couple of setbacks along the way, set an upward trend to the marketplace all year long for the marketing year until we got to the very end of that marketing year. What do you suppose you see in the next 8 months here for corn?
Well, last year, I think you kind of lay down the premise. We were counter-seasonal. We were in a counter-seasonal move, and basically the stocks report just basically was a hiccup in that counter-seasonal move. And then once we got into October, when the seasonals turn up, then the market, it was swimming upstream basically through the summer and the early fall months. And then in October, when the seasonals usually turn up in the first week of October, first 10 days or so October, then the market was able to swim downstream. So it was easier for the market to go higher. So for the most part, basically, you look at this September decline that we had into the October low, that's very seasonal. So far, we're pulling out of the market. So in many instances, the market now is swimming downstream. But it was coming out of a seasonal low. And if you just look at the average seasonal pattern on December corn, it's not uncommon for it to work its way into a first half November high and then kind of settle back into a late November, early December low, which a lot of times checks out the early October low, and that's just the time. Basically, what you have is a lot of long liquidation with December futures going into delivery after a harvest of a new crop. So you do get a lot of downward seasonal pressure as you get into that first week of December. Once you get past that seasonal week time frame, basically the seasonals then are pretty well in line then to kind of help the market move into a sideways to higher climb as you go into the growing season. You still with me?
Oh, yeah. I just was asking a question but didn't turn my mic back on. I was listening and paying close attention and looking at the charts while I was following along with you. So when I look at this weekly corn chart, is it fair to say that from 650 to, say, 725 is that 700 to 800 bushel carryover mark? Is that right?
Well, yeah, I mean, this year we do have the supplies are looser this year, but still historically tight. I mean, we're still under a billion bushels. But the difference that we have this year, and this is where I think the overall seasonal pattern may play out a little different. As you remember, last year I was pretty much on a seasonal course. I didn't want to do anything until you got into that June, July time frame.
Right.
This year you might want to alter that a little bit, simply because last year we knew we had to ration inventory
because we were short wheat too.
Yes, and last year was all about choking demand or slowing demand, and it took all summer to get the job done, but we do have the job done, and now we're this move down to 575 off of the 779 high on D's corn basically was the realization that, yes, we did get the job done on the rationing front. We don't necessarily have to ration this year. So seasonal strength and sharply higher prices on what we know today on October 13th, we probably don't have to go back and visit those levels. and we're more in a demand building situation, and I think we need to convince the end users that, you know, $6 corn, $6.50 corn is going to be around for a while, so they will be able to stick their neck out and start building demand. And this is where we're going to have problems unless we have a surprise that China buys more grain than what the market is anticipating. And I think, you know, trade chatter basically is in that 3 to 5 million ton mark. You can see USDA estimated the China corn crop here the other day at 182, which, you know, we discussed there on Friday with the feed grains council that they were down at the 167. So there's a big spread there between, you know, the grain feed grains council ideas and what USDA, most people in the trade was in that 180 to 182. Now, nobody has a lot of confidence in these numbers, but those numbers would suggest that China is not going to be a big buyer. But if the numbers are much smaller, they may not have to be as small as what the U.S. Feed Grains Council is looking at. But if they were 4 to 5, 6 million tons less than what USDA is estimating, then China would be a little bigger buyer of corn, and then you've got a little different, more animal on your hands. You've got exports and rising, and see, you can see yesterday on the supply demand table, USDA whacked that corn exports another 50 million. So we do need to solidify the export market and get that going if we're going to go kind of go back to the levels that we saw here this summer.
Dan, thank you so very much for taking so much time with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on this closing market report for a Thursday afternoon. We'd bring you the agricultural news, but I blew right through that listening to Dan and watching the chart. And I think you probably agree that's more valuable. So we'll give you a quick memory look at those headlines. And the big news was, of course, that the trade agreements were approved both by the House and the Senate for Colombia, South Korea, and Panama last night. And that's the first time really that's happened in a big way since the North American Free Trade Agreement was passed in the early 1990s. In a moment, we'll take a look at what's been happening in the backyard of Lisa Braltz. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
In agricultural news,
Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop. And from Prairie Fruits Farm, makers of Farmstead and artisan cheeses and growers of organic tree fruits and berries. This summer, Prairie Fruits holds a cheese and gelato open house on Tuesdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Information on products and activities at prairiefruits.com and on Facebook at Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, canning gets most of the attention when it comes to the fall food preservation season. But Lisa Braltz says there's another method worthy of consideration in this edition of In My Backyard.
So I ask you, what is not to like about the tartness, the sting of a really good pickle or a sharp yogurt or that last swig of buttermilk out of the carton or bottle? Or is that last one just me and my dad? Let's talk about pickling and fermenting for a few minutes. It seems to run a distant second to canning vegetables from the garden or the market when it comes to food preservation, at least in my very unscientific observations. It's just rarely what comes up in food preservation conversations. Maybe this is because it seems like there's a lot of, oh, just pour some briny water over those cucumbers and let them sit on the counter for a few days. Stuff like that. The instructions for pickling and fermentation sometimes run counter to what we've been taught about food safety, even though these methods of preserving foods have been used for millennia. They're putting bacteria, the good kind, to work. It could also be that the flavors can be really intense and the smells can be really pungent. Pickled and fermented vegetables are considered good for digestion and general health in many different cultures, but most of them use the foods in much smaller doses as a condiment or a side. And pickling and fermentation, especially fermentation, can also be a bit more volatile, but that might make things more interesting. If something explodes, you know you did it wrong. Considering how much I like pickly, fermenty things, it's a little strange I haven't attempted this on my own. I needed a guru, though, someone not far away who could give me a bit more insight into the process and help me get over my apprehension. Maybe even, somewhere down the line, supervise me. And lo, I found a guy. He also happens to be my neighbor. Mark Hartstein is one of the chefs at Black Dog Smoke and Ale House in Urbana, Illinois. He calls himself the last of a dying breed because he's learned his craft entirely on the job. He has no formal culinary training. While his food is great, I actually recruited Mark for this piece thanks to the legendary pickles and occasional kimchi or fermented vegetables Korean style he makes for the restaurant. He also happens to live in my neighborhood and considers pickling and fermentation a hobby. It's a nod to his pickle-making grandmother. When I walked into his East Urbana kitchen on a recent Sunday morning, I immediately noticed that every corner of his very small home kitchen had something going on. And as the owner of a very small kitchen myself, this was encouraging and reassuring. Pots hung from racks, the cupboards were full, and there was an array of jars on the counters in various stages of fermenting, and finished products sat on the shelves. I didn't see many machines or gizmos, however. According to him, the home preserver doesn't need a lot of special equipment for pickling and fermenting.
No special equipment is required for this level. These are all refrigerator pickles, which I either brine or ferment and then throw in the refrigerator for some time. So it can be any container that doesn't rust, if you will. That's, I guess, the main consideration about refrigerator pickles. But they're all glass containers. They've all been sanitized with either water bath or bleach. So there's no special equipment required.
Of course, my biggest worry is failure. I hate wasting food. I wanted to know from him, do you fail with this stuff? What do you do when you fail, if you fail? He had some reassuring words for me there, too.
I have many, 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 many failures. It's a long history. As a matter of fact, some of these jars that you're looking at, I was tasting earlier and was disappointed in a couple. So you eat your mistakes as long as they're not spoiled. And pickling is very forgiving about spoilage because it's either high in acidity or high in sodium. So nothing is dangerous with the pickle process per se. Yeah, you eat your mistakes, you throw them out, or you learn from them, and every year's a new batch.
He was heading to some local orchard soon, he said, to gather some apples for another fermentation project, making hard cider. And making batches of kimchi, which he and his wife eat all winter long, was high on the agenda, too. He already had lots preserved. The jars full of food, much of it either grown in his home garden or purchased at a farmer's market, were impressive in number, and they were gorgeous. Of course, he wasn't going to let me go without a sampler. So I left his house with a container full of pickled and fermented vegetables. I sat down later to a mini buffet. These are turnips, I bet. He said he got these turnips at the market, and they're the best turnips he's ever had. So let's try one. Mmm. Oh. These are a revelation. I'm not a huge fan of turnips.
That's Lisa Braltz and her backyard. We'll be back here on the Closing Market Report in just a couple of minutes when we'll take a look at the cash grain market. Matt Bennett from Windsor Grain and TGM will be with us. You can always visit us online if you'd like at willag.org. Programming is made possible by Farm Credit.
It's National Yorkshire Pudding Day. Yes, the dish did originate in Yorkshire, and it is a staple of the British Sunday dinner. It is often claimed that the purpose of the dish was to provide a cheap way to fill the stomach, thus stretching the more expensive dinner ingredients that follow. It's also St. Colman's Day, patron of cattle and horses. While on a pilgrimage to the Holy Lands, Coleman was stopped on suspicion of being a Moravian spy. With no evidence other than being a stranger, he was convicted of espionage, tortured, and hanged with two thieves. In the tradition of the time, the bodies were left to rot as a warning to others. Coleman's body hung there for 18 months, incorrupt and untouched by animals. Miracles were reported at the site, including the scaffolding taking root and putting out branches. On this day in agricultural history, in 54 AD, Claudius, Emperor of Rome, died by poisoning. Supposedly, he was poisoned with mushrooms by his wife, Agrippina, after her son Nero was named as heir. And in 1792, the first Old Farmer's Almanac was published. It is the oldest continuously published periodical in North America. Robert Thomas founded the publication, and it was an almost instant success. In its second year, it sold 9,000 copies at a cost of about 9 cents an issue. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Please do visit us online at willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us, Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks so much. Farmers getting done with their corn harvest in your area?
Yeah, there's a fair amount of guys that are done completely, and a lot of guys are done with either corn or beans as well. So, you know, in our area, I'd say we're probably 90% done.
How tight your basis for corn?
Oh, the basis has been awfully tight, you know. There's guys out here fairly close to us running option price. We're running five under right now, and, you know, I think that one thing that you're seeing is several elevators in this area, especially that I've talked to and that I know of, you know, they're not going to be full on corn. And I think they're trying to secure some of the last bushels coming in. So the base is pretty tight.
It's been quite a long time since they really haven't had to put anything outside on the ground, hasn't it?
That's right. Yes. I mean, it's pretty rare, really, in the last several years that you don't see some corn on the ground somewhere, and you just don't see any right now.
Expectation for the basis to stay tight right on through the end of harvest. We're 49% done in Illinois already.
I really expect it to, and I think looking forward, you could have some real interesting situations on basis. I know we've been talking about this for months, that regionally you'd have some pretty tight basis levels, and that's what's been going on this fall. You know, we've been shipping corn out east where they haven't been able to harvest a whole lot of corn yet for some ethanol plants and some chicken feeders, and gee, man, at Christmas, the levels that they're willing to pay just to get the corn has been excellent. So what's that tell you? You know, our normal customers that we sell corn to, they're going to have to secure some of the corn we normally sell to them from somewhere else. So I think basis levels are bound to be extremely attractive moving forward.
Yeah, so we have a high price. People want the corn. And you think there's more risk out there than reward in the future?
Well, there's a lot of risk out there, no doubt about it. And I would probably, I would recommend to guys, if they are comfortable with the price, to, you know, to look at doing some different things, such as selling, maybe re-owning with call options. Because, you know, while I still feel fairly friendly for a lot of different reasons, I also know this world economic situation has tend to kind of strangle the market every time we get up and going again here in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, it's been a pretty tough downslide, and we were able to bounce back a little bit this week, thank goodness. But I think that the mentality of the marketplace is still that we could have a fair amount of, lower prices still.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. That's this edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul. Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size.